FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Welcome everyone, live across Australia, FNR Football Nation Radio is where you're listening right now. Australia's first and only 24-hour radio station dedicated to the beautiful game of football. I'm Carlos Alberto Diego and this is Culture Cafe, Australia's only breakfast show across TV, radio, print, any media platform. Talking about football 100% today. We are your voice of football. You can join in the conversation anytime during our live shows and be a winner also. We're giving away some fantastic premium-packed panettone from our great friends at Ital. Just give us a call on our talkback line on 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria, plus 613 if you're overseas. SMS us on 0428 933 345. 0428 933 345 if you want to be a winner with this magnificent panettone that we're all feasting on here at FNR with thanks to Ital. You can also, of course, SMS us on 0428 933 345 and share your thoughts and comments throughout our live shows today. Coming up in this hour in the cafe, Carly Adno, the Daily Telegraph reporter who was at the World Cup draw in Russia. She joins us today talking about, you know, the pomp and ceremony around the FIFA awards and their big nights that beamed across the world. And love to get the insight of Carly Adno later on in the show. We travel up to Far North Queensland to talk to Danny Greystone, who's associated with the Far North Queensland FC Heat. And we'll cover that club in our club corner this morning. In the Power and the Passion community segment, Majid Ibrahim this weekend in Adelaide. He meets us talking about the third annual Egyptian Coptic Soccer Championship that's being played in Adelaide this weekend. We'll talk about that and, of course, much, much more. So let's get into it. It was a big round of EPL football to start and to start the show today. We're going to go through some of the managers' reaction after the games. Of course, EPL is just such a big tournament, a big competition around the world, and it's probably the most viewed football or sporting competition close to any other sport across the globe. And of course, what the managers say after the game does generate a lot of media throughout the week. And we start with Sam Allardyce, who's just taken over from Ronald Koeman there at Everton. And they had a big win on the weekend, 2-0 against Huddersfield. And of course, that's backing up on the 3-0 win earlier in the week against West Ham, and of course they're starting to pick up some points. And Sam Allardyce has usually got the Midas touch to, you know, go in halfway through a season or part of the way through the season and then save clubs from relegation and do quite a good job. He's already had the Midas touch in Everton winning on the weekend 2-0. And this is what he had to say after the game.
Yeah, nice weekend for the start. I think that look back at Crystal Palace, I think we drew at Watford when I first started, should have won it, missed a penalty to go 2-0 up, and then took me six games to win my first game. We've got Wednesday under the belt with David's last game in charge. I watched that, and the lads have come in and done the job today. It wasn't as pleasing to the eye as Wednesday, but I think the reason for that was the fatigue the players was showing in the game, but managed to battle the way through it, and our quality shone through in front of goal in the end, particularly with our first goal.
You tweak things at half time a little bit?
Yeah, tactically. Well, yeah, too. I think that Gunnar Sigurdsson and Aaron Lennon were spending too much time on top of our fullbacks, and I wanted our fullbacks to take their fullbacks when their fullbacks push forward and leave Goodney and Aaron in the holes and in the little pockets of space for us to play out and play off, and then we could get up the pitch and start attacking Huddersfield more, which we had a bit of a struggle in the first half with. And I think that helped Goodney Sigurdsson get in the box to get the goal, the first goal. And then, of course, Huddersfield had to come out a bit more so we could keep possession better, get up the pitch more often. And then, obviously, when the second goal came for Dom, it was so pleasing for that young man, because you know, he worked his legs off today up front and did a fantastic job, and then got the benefit by scoring the winning goal today. So the defensive solidarity of the team is very pleasing for me. I mean, conceded so many goals before I got here to virtually limit, I think, I can't remember a shot on target that Jordan Pickford had to save.
There was a scramble before half-time.
But that was it, you know. And that shows that we're doing the right things in and out of possession, and a 2-0 victory and back-to-back wins for us in the last two games have been vitally important to take the pressure off everybody.
Yeah, well, thanks to Optus Sport there. That was Sam Allardyce, new manager of Everton, after their 2-0 win over Huddersfield on the weekend. Of course, we all thought Sam Allardyce was going to retire from football altogether. He was going to, after a big, big career as a terrific manager, especially what I call the relegation specialist, able to keep teams up going in partway through the season after a manager's been sacked. He has been a guy who's made a living out of that. And at times, you know, remember the old Bolton days, Bolton Wanderers days, where, he took teams close to European competition, teams without very much resource at all. He did it with Crystal Palace also. He's a guy that goes in and has just, as I said before, a Midas touch in saving teams and getting them up and running again. And looks like Everton are already enjoying the benefits of having Sam Allardyce as their manager. Of course, the big game on the weekend was the Arsenal-Manchester United game at the Emirates. And, of course, Manchester United won that game 3-1 away from home. But the scoreline really betrayed what the game looked like. Arsenal having 70% possession, but Manchester United being deadly on the counter and actually doing a fantastic job in winning under Jose Mourinho. Arsene Wenger, of course, frustrated after the game that they didn't get more out of it, and this was his reaction.
Look, I'm angry and disappointed because when you produce that quality of performance and you have nothing to show for at the end, it's very difficult to accept. And as always in a defeat, you have sometimes no positives, but today was a lot of positives, but we're not efficient enough in the areas where it matters, and I think we put ourselves in a very difficult situation by being but not starting well at the back at all.
That was the worst possible start. You seemed to lack composure. They were pressing you and forcing mistakes.
It was not even a huge pressing. I think we just had not enough dictating our strengths in the fight from a start on, and despite that, I think we had 33 shots on goal against Man United, so that goalkeeper was absolutely outstanding.
No one could say you didn't try everything. I mean, you threw everything at them, as you say. De Gea saved everything. You also, there were a number of controversial incidents through the game, but did you have a couple of penalty calls in that second half towards the end?
I don't want to speak about the referees anymore, you know. It looked like, but he has to decide. I hope that when you go to Old Trafford, you'll be the same.
But what did you make of the team's performance and their commitment overall?
I'm absolutely proud of their commitment, of their attitude and refusal to lose the game. And I feel sorry for the players to haven't given so much and have not any point at the end.
With thanks to Optus Sport, that was Arsene Wenger, Arsenal manager, after their 3-1 loss to Manchester United at home. Again, he says he's very, very disappointed, given they had 33 shots at goal and David De Gea for Manchester United had a blinder on the night, and obviously was a major reason why Man U were in that game. And, of course, they're deadly on the counter. And as far as Jose Mourinho is concerned, he'll take the 3 points, irrespective of what Arsene Wenger said about the performance and the fact that he felt the Arsenal team was a better side. But Jose Mourinho was excited about his team. He thought the game was fantastic.
I think maybe fair to start with the game, because I think the game was fantastic. If I was on the stands, so if I was at home, I would be sad to see the game finish. In my case, it's different, because I want to win and I want the game to finish. But the game, I think it was fantastic because I saw two very good teams going through different moments of the game, moments where my players had to adapt we come with a certain intention and we manage to start the game with that intensity, with that aggressivity, with that desire to play high and to play in their half and to create mistakes in their building up. Then for the rest of the first half we went through a period where Arsenal played fantastic attacking football, and then in the second half, when the game was dead, when the game was controlled, to play with 10 men and again an Arsenal that risk everything with lots of attacking players. So I think the game was fantastic, and in relation to my team, I think amazing individual performances, collectively very, very strong, and I couldn't be happier with what the boys did.
Yeah, well, thanks to Fox Sports, that was Jose Mourinho in the aftermatch with his team beating Arsenal 3-1. Of course, Manchester United beating Arsenal 3-1 away from home in the Emirates with 10 men in the end. And of course, he touched on the fact he did it with 10 men, and the Paul Pogba red card was something that he, I suppose, wasn't all that happy about.
The red card, I didn't see. I was not even looking in that direction. No television yet for me. I just know that Paul is frustrated, a bit disappointed with this colleague Koscielny, with this kind of a reaction. But Paul very frustrated because everybody knows that Paul is a clean player, and was not his intention, not at all, to be close to a red card. But I don't know.
That was Jose Mourinho again talking about the Paul Pogba send-off. But I suppose at the end of the day, gives his star player at least a week's rest and to recover in a long season. They don't mind the odd day off. And I suppose the red card might lead to that. And I'm not sure whether we're getting any more weeks for that. But also, the more important thing is that Manchester United had won that game 3-1 away from home at Arsenal. David Moyes, the manager of West Ham, hasn't had a happy time since he's taken over the club. On the weekend, they were up against Manchester City. It was probably one of their better performances since he's taken over, but in the end they still lost, and he showed that he was pretty gutted after the game.
Well, we're gutted that we lost it. You know, we played against a really good side, everybody knows that, and I thought for long periods we frustrated them. Arguably we might have the best chances in the first half. Adrian had a few really good saves to make, but mainly from distance. So, I mean, ultimately disappointed not to take some from the game, but really pleased with the performance of the players.
I still think it's fair to say your plan worked. Just tell us more about what that was and how you came up with it. Was it to do with what Huddersfield and Southampton had done as well?
Well, we eventually, Manchester City will force you back into, you know, you need all your players back. We weren't good enough at keeping the ball and starting the ball, which would have meant we could have played slightly different. But I've got to say the defensive setup was good. You know, we kept defending when we had to. I've seen a lot of Manchester City over the last year or so, and they've improved all the time. And it's not just one player with Manchester City. There's so many players can cause you problems. But I thought in the main today that our player's done really well.
What did you make of your goalkeeper today? Is he giving you a good problem, if you like, moving forward?
Yeah, I thought he made saves. I think if you're going to play Man City, you're going to need a good goalkeeper. I think whatever team it will be, you know, you're always going to have to deal with things against them. And Adrian played really well today.
Anything more you could have done with that winning goal, or is that just a sublime pass from a great footballer?
I think we should have done much better with it. I would hope that, you know, if you're a centre half in the position it was in, that you would deal with that and you would stop the ball getting through, or you would head it away. I think the ball was probably about 30 yards out when he made the pass. So I'm disappointed we lost the goal, but you've got to remember we're playing a young 18-year-old centre half who done really well today. And if ever there was going to be a test for him, it would be this game today.
Yeah, well, thanks to Fox Sports, that's David Moyes in the after game where his team West Ham lost 2-1 away from home to Manchester City on the weekend. He continues to publicly criticise some of his players, and we know how sometimes sensitive players are to that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens long term with David Moyes, given it's still before Christmas, still a long way to go in this season. He's not caring too much about the sensitivities of some of his players when he talks about their performance. He was very critical of them after their first loss under his, once he first came into the club and started managing that club. And he's continued on, takes every opportunity to make sure the players held accountable for what they're doing. Alan Pardew, a manager who'd been out of the game for a while, was very, very happy about taking over the West Brom job on the weekend. It was his first game against his old club, Crystal Palace. It was nil all in the end, but he talked a little bit about his time at Crystal Palace and what it meant for him to be facing them in his first game in charge for West Brom.
Yeah, a little bit, and obviously I know the threat of Zaha and Christian on the break and some of the honesty that they put in, I thought was good to see. I think Roy's got them in a really good place at the moment, and they'll be as tough as anybody in the bottom 12. So we did a decent job without actually getting the win.
Yeah, a lot of respect there by Alan Pardew for Roy Hodgson, who is managing his former club, Crystal Palace. He actually did spend some time talking about what it was like being back in management.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You enjoy the camaraderie of the dressing room and the feeling of the dressing room. I'm not sure I enjoyed all the smells in the dressing room this weekend, but other than that, it was nice. And some really good pros in there. I thought they were very focused before the game because we have a lot of experience in there. So we're looking forward to working with them.
Alan Pardew there with thanks to Fox, Optus Sports, talking about being back in management. It's funny, a lot of these guys leave management, whether they've been sacked or whether they've just resigned or even retired in Sam Allardyce's case. And they keep out of the game for a while, but they can't keep out of it for too long. And when they do get their next job, it's almost another lease of life for them. And it looks like Alan Pardew's got that with this new position there at West Brom. The last manager that we'll hear from this morning is Mauricio Pochettino, the manager for Tottenham. Of course, they're on a pretty indifferent run since their two-game sort of a Champions League run against Real Madrid, where they did so well. They drew over at the Bernabeu and they won in England in the second game. And since that time, they've really dropped off in the English Premier League. And on the weekend, they played Watford in the derby. One all draw in the end, and I suppose it's another disappointing result for a team that has designs on winning the championship. They've dropped off, as I said, in the last three or four games. And this is him after the game, probably putting a bit of a positive spin around things, saying how proud he was of the team's character.
I am so pleased because it's true that the last few games we feel very disappointed about the result, frustrated because we deserve more in the last four games. But today is nothing to say about the performance and the character and the personality of the team, because playing 40 minutes with 10 men, I think the team show unbelievable character, always go forward and was brave to go to rather to play for the draw. Was always thinking to go forward and trying to score and win the game. We didn't concede one chance on the second half with 10 men, and I think we were close to score. I think I am so proud about the character that the team showed today.
That's Mauricio Pochettino, very positive about his team's performance against Watford, the one-all draw, even though, again, probably a couple of points dropped there according to what the expectations of Tottenham fans would be. But they're trying to recover after, trying to balance out the Champions League responsibilities and also the EPL responsibilities. Let's take a break. Coming up very, very soon, we're going to go to Adelaide and we're going to speak to Majed Ibrahim about the third annual Egyptian Coptic Soccer Championship in our Power and the Passion segment here on Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Live across Australia, this is FNR Football Nation Radio. It's Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. It's been a big show so far, talking about EPL and the aftermatch responses by some of the managers in the EPL. And, of course, you can join in the conversation anytime during the show and anytime on our live shows today. And also, by doing so, you could be a big winner of a traditional premium pack Panettone from our great friends there at Ital. Just give us a call on 9944 9999. That's 9944 9999. 03 in front of that if you're outside Victoria, plus 613 if you're overseas. You can also SMS us your thoughts and comments on 0428 9334 5 0428 9334 5. The best caller or SMSer and or SMSers will receive a premium packed Panettone from Ital. And it's a fantastic. We've been feasting on them here at FNR for the last couple of days, and they're terrific Panettone. Terrific with some coffee, terrific with some brekkie, and I'll be tucking into that myself after the Calcio Cafe today. Of course, in our passion, our power and the passion segment today, we'll travel over to Adelaide and speak to a person who is actually involved in the third annual Egyptian Coptic Soccer Championship that's being played in Adelaide today. And I speak of Magid Ibrahim. Good morning to you, Magid.
Good morning, Carlos.
Yes, thanks for joining us this morning, mate. Tell us about the third annual Egyptian Coptic Soccer Championship. How many teams, how many players, where is it being played this weekend?
Okay, so, yeah, as you said, it's the third competition. Like last couple of years, our team from Adelaide travelled to Melbourne and to Sydney, and this year we're hosting it here in Adelaide at the Parks Football Centre, which is a fantastic venue that we were lucky enough to get for this competition. There should be five teams competing this year. We've got a team from Melbourne coming, a team from Canberra, a team from Gold Coast, and we've got two teams from Adelaide. So, yeah, there's plenty of interest, and our community here in Adelaide is really, really looking forward to it.
So what inspired the start of the tournament all those years ago?
Well, basically, Egyptians everywhere are obsessed with football, and you know, it's the number one sport. Everyone loves it, everyone plays it. We had a few guys in Melbourne in the Coptic community that, you know, really worked hard to get the first one going. So I just, you know, speaking to a few people that, you know, interstate and whatever, you know, what do you think if we get something like this started? And of course everyone was interested. The first one was always going to be the hardest because it hadn't been done before. But a few guys, Peter Boulos and John Iskander and Michael Morkos, who worked really hard for that first one in 2015. And it was a real success. It brought a lot of people together. We got pretty good attendance and everyone had a fantastic time. And we hope to keep it going in future years.
So, Megan, tell me about what this does for the community, the benefits that have accrued from these sort of tournaments and coming together, even the organisation part of it. I think that would be a bonding experience, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If I can talk about just the Adelaide team, we've got a lot of youth in our community and, you know, a lot that you don't see all the time, and people get busier as they get older. But when it comes to something like this, I mean, our group have been training together now for 2-3 months, and you know, everyone is really keen and spending a lot of time together and then working together to organize. Also just liaising with the guys interstate, so it really has formed, you know, good relationships. And yeah, it's a fantastic way to bring people together because everyone's so passionate about it.
Now, we see the benefits accruing, and no doubt this weekend will be a fantastic tournament and everyone will walk away raving about it. But what are the challenges of putting something like this together? We talk about a national competition in that people and teams are coming from all over Australia to Adelaide this weekend. What are the challenges around putting something like this together?
I think probably the major challenge is getting, so teams that have to travel, so, you know, they've got to raise their own money to travel and accommodation and that kind of thing. So probably the expense, especially for the teams travelling, is probably one of the challenges. The other thing is, you know, just in terms of organising an event like this, you we sort of wanted to make sure we get the best available grounds and referees and that. So there's a little bit of organisation that goes with it. But I think what's proved to be a challenge is just the teams travelling and how they get here and how they fund their travel. So that's probably the biggest one. But yeah, we're pretty fortunate that we still get good numbers coming.
Of course, the aim of the championship is to bring the Coptic Fellowship together, and obviously that's under the Coptic Church. How serious do players get, and do some step over the line and perhaps don't, sort of live the values of the Coptic Church?
We've done okay in that regard in previous years. I mean,
No yellow and red cards.
I think there's a few yellows. I don't remember any reds as yet. Like any football match, you know, it gets heated at times and people might sort of get worked up in the heat of the moment, but generally it's been pretty good, and the respect between the teams and fellowship between the teams is getting stronger, so I don't foresee any problems. So yeah, hopefully we keep going on that path.
So how many people do you expect not only to play this weekend, but also attending by way of spectating or support staff?
Yeah. Well, I think in terms of attendance, we're very hopeful that this year will be the most. So in Adelaide, we've only got the one Coptic church, so it's a very tight community. I think it's something like 200 families that are part of our congregation, and we're also organising a match for the younger kids just before the grand final. So, I think that will bring a lot of our community as well. So, I would say anywhere could be 300-400 people just in terms of spectators. Hopefully more, but I think it'll be something around that.
And, of course, one of the big Egyptian stars in the game at the moment, Mo Salah. How many of the boys and the players maybe try and reenact the movements and the performances of someone like a Mo Salah?
Yeah, I think all the boys, and especially with Egypt making the World Cup now, so everyone's pretty much idolising Salah at the minute. Mm. Just adds to the flavour and adds to the excitement.
And of course, you mentioned the World Cup. Of course, in Group A, Egypt's got Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Uruguay. Not quite the group of death, but you've got the host nation. Are you pretty happy about that?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people I speak to are very hopeful on Egypt qualifying. I still think it'll be difficult because Uruguay's pretty decent team, and I don't expect the host to bundle out in the group. So, but Egypt's got a very good team. I think the personnel-wise, they've got probably the best team they've had in a little while now. So, yeah, we're hopeful we can get out of that group.
Well, you never know. They might be able to get a couple of recruits out of your tournament this weekend, Magid. Thanks very much for your time today. Congratulations on this initiative. It's great using football to bring people together, whether it be for a part of a church or whether it be any other activity out there. And all the best from FNR on a fantastic tournament this weekend in Adelaide.
No worries. And thank you so much for having me and for, sort of promoting this event. We appreciate it very much.
Our pleasure, mate. That's Magid Ibrahim, of course, associated with the third annual Egyptian Coptic Soccer Championship in Adelaide this weekend. That's part of our Power and the Passion community segment today. Next up, we're going to travel up to Far North Queensland and talk to Far North Queensland FC Heat Danny Greystone about the club there and its aspirations for the coming season. This is Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego.
FNR, Football Nation Radio. Culture Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Streaming football 24/7 live across Australia. This is FNR Football Nation Radio. Calcio Cafe with Carlos Alberto Diego. Coming up very, very soon is Carly Adno, the journo for the Daily Telegraph. She was at the World Cup draw and she'll be giving us a bit of a wrap on all that. And of course, much, much more on the Calcio Cafe this morning. But we'll in the meantime, we'll cross to Far North Queensland and speak to a man who's associated with the Far North Queensland FC Heat in the Queensland Conference of the NPL. Good morning to you, Danny Greystone.
Good morning. How are we?
Yeah, really, really well, mate. Thanks for joining us this morning. Can you tell us a little bit about the Far North Queensland FC Heat? It's a bit of a mouthful, but I'm sure it's a fantastic club with plenty of players and playing a terrific competition.
Yes, well, I mean, it's not too much of a mouthful anymore because we're not actually known as the FNQ Heat anymore. We're actually known as Cairns FC.
Okay.
That happened around about 6 weeks ago. I've been in North Queensland around about 7 days. I used to ply my trade in South Australia. But a lot of things happened with FNQ Heat last year, and we've rebranded. We're now called Cairns FC, and we're in the NPL in Queensland.
Okay, now the NPL in Queensland is a relatively new competition, I believe.
Yeah, it's been around a few years, but quite honestly, it's relatively new to me as well. I mean, I've watched a lot of the games in Queensland, and I know a lot about the football up there, but, you know, it is relatively new competition, just like most of the NPLs. But it's a strong competition. It's, you know, in comparison to what I've seen in South Australia, it's going to be a very strong season. It's going to be a very difficult season. And the quality seems to be getting a little bit closer to the A-League every year.
Now, Danny, we get told, obviously, that it's a hotbed of, in more ways than one, pardon the pun, because I know it's hot up there, but it's a hotbed of football talent up there with a lot of great Indigenous young talent coming through and also other young talent that actually doesn't get the opportunity because they're so far away geographically from the city centres. How are you finding it, especially given that you've come in there relatively recently to take over the head coach job there at Cairns FC?
Well, to be clear, you're very accurate there in what you're saying. I mean, the one thing I've experienced here, there is a lot of good young talents. The one thing that we're trying to stop in establishing Cairns FC up here is there's a lot of players who get to sort of 17, 18 and really haven't got anywhere to go. So they end up moving to Brisbane or they end up moving to Victoria or New South Wales to try and get that next level of football. That's something that we're trying to stop. We've teamed up with Brisbane Roar and established the Brisbane Roar Academy up here as well. So we're trying to create pathways for these players so they can come through and play and aspire to play A-League football or NPL football at the best level they can and not have to move away from Far North Queensland and in particular Cairns.
Of course, one of the success stories there was Frank Farina came through the Cairns system there and, again, had to gravitate to a city centre to be able to be recognised, went on to be one of our greatest ever Socceroos. Are we seeing that level of talent coming through at the moment?
Oh, look, it's quite honestly, it's very, very difficult for me to answer that because I've only really been here in a short space of time. But, you know, the one thing I've seen from the quality of the players that I've already worked with and the quality of the juniors and the quality of the seniors is that there is a massive amount and there's a high level of quality here. And probably the biggest thing as well with it being regional is the level of passion of the people in the area. You know, these people up here are extremely passionate about their football. You know, they want to push on, they want to be successful. And with the establishment of Cairns FC, what we're trying to do is get all these stakeholders just heading in the same direction. And in turn from that will come the quality, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
So, Danny, tell us about the impact of a club like Cairns FC. I know that you want to be as elite as possible, give your elite players and your good players a chance for a player pathway to professional football one day. But what does the impact of a club like Cairns FC have on the local community?
Well, they have a massive amount of impact, and that impact can be either very, very positive, it can be very, very negative. It's a very, very different arena to what you'd experience in sort of South Australia and what I've experienced because you've got so many teams in such a small area. That doesn't happen in the regional areas. And when it comes to sort of player pathways, for example, you know, if Cairns FC, you know, spot good talent in all the different clubs, and they take all that talent out of the clubs, you know, it kind of really rips the heart and soul out of them. So what we've worked hard towards this year, and it, well, particularly the first 2 months of establishing Cairns Football Club, is working with the clubs and trying to find a relationship where we can work with the best players in the area, and also then the better players in the area can go back to the clubs and play for them as well. So these better players are getting a balance. They're getting a balance of the elite coaching, but they're also helping the local clubs and to push them forward as well. But it's very, very difficult, and it's very, very different in these regional areas to ID the talent and get these talented players working together, so they get the best arena so they can push forward to professional level. But we think we've found a model now where it can work good for everyone.
And of course, a lot of lessons probably have been learned from the North Queensland Fury demise in the A-League a number of years ago. What would be your vision for the club in 10 years' time?
Well, hopefully, I mean, if we keep pushing forward, I think there is definitely... we can definitely have an A-League club up here, whether it be the A-League 1 or hopefully one day we've got this A-League 2 where we establish a promotion and relegation. There's definitely the passion up here to have an A-League side. It's just, it's got to be done right. It's got to be done at the right time. It's got to be in the right area. For me, Cairns with the passionate and the amount of supporters that they've got in this area who support their football, there's definitely the chance for us to have an A-League, either A-League 1 or 2 side up here. But like I say, it's got to be the right time, and it's got to be the right location and the right people behind it.
Fantastic, Danny. Well, all the best of luck there. I know you're new to the area, but obviously you've got a bit of experience in the area of football coaching and going up there and maybe unearthing some gems for us. I believe some of our best players can come from real remote areas around Australia, and it's guys like you who will bring that to the fore. So thanks for joining us today.
No problem at all. I appreciate it.
Good on you, mate. That's Danny Greystone, the head coach of Cairns FC, formerly the FNQ FC Heat up there. Whenever I see that name, I just feel so hot and, you know, and bothered over playing football in the Heat. But it's a beautiful place up there in far north Queensland. It's great that Cairns FC is doing a great job engaging its community and making its young players flourish. Let's now turn our attention to the World Cup draw. I know we touched on it yesterday in covering the groups and who Australia will be playing. But one person who was over there on behalf of the Daily Telegraph was Carly Adno, and she joins us this morning. Good morning to you there, Carly.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good. How's the jet lag going?
I was there for too short. I didn't really pick it up in the first place. I was almost on Australian time the whole time I was there trying to get all the work done.
Yeah.
A bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah, best way to deal with it there, Carly. But France, Denmark, Peru, what was your reaction to Australia's draw for the World Cup? You were there live?
Yeah, I was in the room. Initially, I thought, oh, that's a tough one. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, it's actually a pretty good group. There's a bit of hope. There's an opportunity to test ourselves against some of the best. So I actually think it's a pretty good group.
It's interesting, Carly, because I think if we play well, I mean, it just seems so, you know, such a simple theory, but if we play well, we're a chance against teams like Denmark and Peru if they don't play well. And also, I think France, I mean, the reason why I say it, because France doesn't need to play well to necessarily beat teams, I think we would need to play well, and I think Denmark and Peru needs to play well to beat other teams in that group. What were the reaction of other journos? Obviously, you're rubbing shoulders with journos from all around the world. What were their reactions to their countries being drawn against Australia?
When I got to the mix zone afterwards, the French and Danish journalists were just smiling from ear to ear. They absolutely thought it was the best draw ever for them. They honestly all thought that Australia were one of the weakest teams in Pot 4, and they were thrilled to get Australia in the group. But they really don't know much about Australia at all.
Mm.
So they were really happy. The more I spoke to them, the more I, you know, told them about some of the players, they realised, oh, okay, there are some pretty good players in there. But every single person I asked, what do you know about the Socceroos? The only answer is Tim Cahill.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's still like that. It'll still be like that for a while. But I do think there's an opportunity for the Socceroos to kind of spring a few surprises, change the perception. Hopefully they do that in Russia.
Absolutely. And it's funny, it's really entrenched, isn't it? People around the world, their perception of other countries, they don't really see what's happening at that time, or they don't even see, for example, a 2006 side that got to the knockout stage, nearly beat Italy. I mean, that just is completely wiped from the radar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Because, I mean, if I had to look at the team sheets, I pointed out to them, look, there's Matty Ryan in the Premier League, there's Aaron Moy in the Premier League, there's Ile Jedinak at Aston Villa, he's been in the Premier League for ages. If they had to have a closer look, they would see, this is a decent team. A lot of them didn't even realise that Australia didn't have a coach at the moment. So I think a lot of it comes down to a little bit of ignorance, and I'm sure now they'll start doing a bit more research on the Socceroos and get more prepared.
Of course, the FIFA rankings determine the groups this time, and I kind of like the fact that, not that I'm a devotee to FIFA rankings, I think they're weird sometimes, but yeah. The fact that the groups seem really even and that more teams, I think, have a chances of getting out of those groups if they're lowly ranked, I think worked well. Were the FIFA people there happy about this new way of constructing their groups?
Yeah, I think there were, but there was the general feeling that it's not the most exciting draw we've ever seen. You kind of like to see those big games in the first round, and especially, you know, the opening match between Russia and Saudi Arabia. It's not the most exciting, game. And I wonder, you know, just how much that has to do with the fact that the likes of Italy and Holland and Chile have all missed out. You know, if they were part of it, there'd be a lot more big clashes and, you know, heavyweights in the groups.
Absolutely. And obviously you've got to have a group of death, and Australia's usually in the group of death. I don't think they're in it this time, but what was the universally accepted group of death this time around?
The group that Spain and Portugal land themselves in. I think that was clearly, probably the toughest group. Everyone was, really happy with their draw. The English media, the English team afterwards, they couldn't believe their luck with the draw that they found themselves in. I think they've got Belgium and Tunisia. I can't remember the other one that they've got, but they were really happy with theirs. Spain and Portugal, obviously, Portugal, the European champions. Spain are former World Cup winners. That's their neighbours, their rivals. That's going to be a great game.
And you can't discount Iran either. I mean, they've actually been a really good team in World Cups without doing too much damage, but they held their own. They've got a football culture there. They won the group in Asia, quite comfortably in the end. And you never know what you get from Morocco.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Iran have been there for, like you mentioned, they've been at the World Cup for ages, and they've got a really experienced coach this time. They've got Carlos Queiroz, who has been... he's been with several countries and clubs. He's really experienced, and I spotted him quite a few times in the hotel, and every time he walked around, he was just swamped by people wanting interviews, autographs, photos. A really high-profile coach they've got.
And it's really interesting with Carlos Queiroz. He's been with Iran for a few years, as you said, but he's actually threatened to resign a few times because he's got no resource. They don't play at home. It's just a really, really tough job. But he's really, he just keeps on sticking with those players. There must be a terrific spirit in that team.
Yeah. I can't imagine how difficult that job must be. He has. There's been quite a few he's threatened to resign, like you mentioned. It's a testament to the kind of coach he is. And I did get to know him a little bit when he actually worked with the South African national team for a bit. All the players really, really liked him. And he's got a good thing going there. He's obviously a very good manager.
And, of course, Australia's preparations for the World Cup. It's interesting. I spoke to Luke Casserly yesterday, the head of performance there at FFA, and, they think that they're ahead of everyone with their, the fact that they've got their venue or they've got their base camp already in Kazan, and they've really thought long and hard about, what is to come ahead. A lot of the other countries haven't, though. Luke was saying that Denmark haven't even got a venue or a base camp yet.
Interesting. And I think England also had their base camp down as Sochi ages ago, but that might have changed at the last minute. So I think I think Australia are one of the first and most organised to get these things already. And aren't they just so lucky that the first game they play against France is in Kazan? You can actually see the Kazan Stadium from their training base, which is... It's really going to feel like a bit of a home game away from home. And I know that they've got so many plans to turn that base into something really comfortable for the Socceroos. They're going to, you know, do kit out every single player's room. And it's great to see how organized they are. I mean, they locked this in ages ago. They went to visit it in 2015. So really good to see them so well organized from that perspective.
Now, I'm not sure how many FIFA events you've been to, but tell us about the event in general. I know they roll out the big stars. I saw Diego Maradona there. You know, he's not looking as svelte as he was as a player, but he was there, you know, pulling out balls. And Gary Lineker, it's interesting, he's a staunch critic of FIFA, but he was one of the co-hosts.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision that he has come out, you know, against FIFA numerous times, and he decided to take this job. His reasoning was that FIFA have changed, or they've tried to change governance since then, and he'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now. But yeah, there were plenty of superstars there, and Pele was there, and Gordon Banks, and Cafu, and Fabio Cannavaro representing Italy, who weren't there at all. It was a good event. There are a few things that Russia need to work on for next year. Things didn't run very, you know, completely smoothly, and for media it was a little bit difficult at times. So there are things to work on, but overall, yeah, it was a pretty good event.
For those Aussies out there who don't really understand how big it is from a media perspective, can you tell us how many journos were there that you were fighting for space in that media area?
Well, there was real surprise that I was the only print journalist from Australia there, because every single other country, you know, probably had about six or seven print journos, several radio and broadcast journos out there, and Australia didn't have many, not much representation at all. So, it was massive. There were hundreds of journos there. It's going to be nothing compared to what Russia are going to have next year. But one of the real problems was, as soon as the draw started, the Wi-Fi went down. And that was not ideal for journalists trying to cover a live event. And the explanation afterwards was there were so many people jumped on at once. And I said, well, what do you expect? It's going to be a whole lot more difficult next year. So there are definitely a few things they need to work on.
It wasn't deliberate, was it, Carly?
Oh, I hope not. I mean, Vladimir Putin was in the crowd. So.
That's great, mate. Well, look, thanks for joining us this morning. I'm glad you got over there and you got to get a sense of what it's all about. Are you the journo from News Limited that's going to get the gig for the World Cup? That's the question.
Oh, I guess I don't know at this stage. There's so many good journalists that we've got. There's a bit of a ranking system. We'll see how it goes next year.
Oh, well, look, I know David Davutovic, I know Matty Winley, but I'll vote for you if you need any support there, mate.
Oh, thank you.
No worries,
thanks
Carly.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks very much for your time this morning, Carly.
Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. That's Carly Adno from the Daily Telegraph. Was there live, the only print journalist, would you believe, from Australia at the World Cup draw in Russia on the weekend, telling us all about it. That brings Calcio Cafe to an end for today. If you want to podcast the show, it is on SoundCloud and also iTunes. So until this time tomorrow, may you have a great day in football.